Hello and welcome to episode number 39 of the AFTV Newscast. My name is Elias Saba and I run AFTVnews.com, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. This episode is being recorded on May 13th, 2016. I've got a whole bunch of great stories to talk about, and of course we've got a bunch of comments and questions submitted that I'll be going over at the end of the episode. As always, I stream the podcast live on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. Love when people can watch live, but of course I always put it up after the fact in audio format and on YouTube in video format, where you can get it through iTunes, through TuneIn, through Google Play, through Stitcher, and of course on YouTube, like I said. So let's go ahead and get right into things. All right, first up, I want to talk about this new guide, actually a pair of guides that I wrote. First one's about how to set a custom screensaver time on the Fire TV or the Fire TV Stick. Now, as most of you probably know, the Fire TV has a screensaver that you can enable, and it lets you pick from three different times, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or 15 minutes, on when the screensaver will actually kick in. You can also select never so that it never kicks in. But I've been getting a lot of requests about how to set custom times for the screensaver, and whether some people want it to kick in like after a minute. You know, they see no reason for Fire TV to just sit there idle on a screen. It's a very simple process. Basically, you just have to run this one command after you connect to the device via ADB. Link in the show notes to this guide. For those who don't know how to connect via ADB, you can go to avtvnews.com/ADB. Full instructions there. And basically, you just connect via ADB, and then you enter this command. And at the end of the command is a number, and that number is how long the Fire TV will wait in milliseconds before kicking in the screensaver. Again, very simple. The nice thing is you don't have to be rooted. Your device does not have to be rooted to actually use this command. It's basically just setting a setting value called screen off timeout. And that value is accessible to non-rooted devices, so it's nice that you could just set it there. And then there's this other command, it's optional, where you can run it just to see what your Fire TV is set at. One thing to note is that when you set your screensaver to a custom time, like, I don't know, say you wanted to set it for 17 minutes or something like that, you just basically calculate, you know, how many milliseconds are in 17 minutes, and then that's the number that you put at the end. But one thing to note is that when you go into the Fire TV settings page where it shows the screensaver time setting, it's not going to show that custom setting. It's still going to show either the 5, 10, 15, or never that you had previously selected. It can only show those. So to overwrite your custom setting, all you have to do is select one of the default options, and then that basically overwrites it and just sets it to whatever it is. So the default option is 5 minutes, which I believe is 300,000 milliseconds, if I'm not mistaken. So this guide kind of works in tandem with the second guide that I wrote here. So the second one is how to set a custom sleep timer on a rooted Fire TV or Fire TV Stick. Now this guide again has to be for a rooted device. Unfortunately, you cannot set a custom sleep timer. And by sleep timer, I mean the amount of minutes or seconds or whatever you want to set that the Fire TV waits before it goes to sleep. And so by default, all Fire TVs and Fire TV Sticks will wait 20 minutes and then basically go to a black screen and go into sleep mode. There's no option in the Fire TV's settings interface or anything to change that. It's just set to 20 minutes by default with no, you know, unfortunately there's no way to change it. But if you have a rooted device, that gives you access to more things than a non-rooted device, and you know, figured out how you can actually change it. It was actually MacGyver83 who posted this on Reddit. Checked it out myself. Tried it out. Sure enough, works really nicely. And so this one's a little bit more difficult to follow. So of course the device has to be rooted. You connect via ADB. You run this one command to essentially open a settings database that is, you know, located in the Fire TV system data directory, which normally is not accessible, not modifiable. And then you run a command similar to the other one where you basically set a millisecond timeout. So by default, it's set to 20 minutes, and you can set that to basically anything you want. You just, you know, figure out the milliseconds that it would be and you set it. And so if you wanted it, for example, for your Fire TV to never time out, I know some people were having issues where when their Fire TV timed out, their TV was not being able to find the input correctly, or they were having some HDCP copy protection issues where the TV couldn't do the handshaking. I've gotten a lot of requests for this kind of guide. And so if you want that, then you can just set some really absurdly long, you know, timeout. And so I have an example here for, I won't even bother reading the number, but it basically sets it to 24 days. And so that's essentially, you know, never timing out. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that the screensaver and the sleep timer kind of work in tandem. meaning that the screensaver time is included in the timeout time. So if you have a screensaver set to kick in after 15 minutes and your timeout sleep time is set to 20 minutes, that means basically your Fire TV will sit idle. After 15 minutes, the screensaver will kick in, and then after 5 minutes, it'll go to sleep. So it's not, the sleep timer does not start counting after the screensaver kicks in. It starts counting the same time that screensaver timer starts counting, which is when the Fire TV goes idle. So there are actually other settings and other values that can be set using these similar methods. For those of you who are comfortable, you know, modifying an SQLite database or modifying Android's settings via ADB, you can probably look into that further and see what else there is there. If you have an idea of something that you wish you could modify, you wish you could set, feel free to leave a comment on this episode. I'll look at that and maybe I'll figure out how to do it for you, write a little guide. But you know, these two guides are kind of almost like a door into further modifications of, you know, deeper settings that are just, you know, set by default that really you cannot modify. All right, next up, pretty much almost every week we get like a new feature that Alexa can do by default. Of course, there are a bunch of Alexa skills that third parties have written, and those add a whole bunch of capabilities to Alexa, both on the Amazon Echo and the Amazon Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick. But it's always nice to see what Amazon is adding, you know, by default into the Amazon Echo. And this week they've added the ability for you to check your Amazon order status, basically, through Alexa on the Fire TV or the Echo. And so very simply, you could just say, Alexa, where's my stuff? Or Alexa, track my order. And basically, you'll get back a response telling you who placed the order, what time the order was placed, and what day, and when the order is expected to arrive. I know a lot of people were kind of concerned. People were commenting. They were concerned about privacy issues. And I'll tell you right now that Alexa does not tell you what was ordered. So there's no concern there. You can't like spoil a gift or something. I mean, unless you don't order too much, and just the fact that you ordered something from Amazon is a spoiler, you know, it gives away something to somebody in your household. So it's a nice handy little feature, you know, something that kind of wish was there from the beginning. I think I remember when I first got my Amazon Echo, one of the first things I did was ask about one of my orders, ask about my stuff, and unfortunately it didn't support that feature. I can demonstrate it here pretty, you know, live right now. I'm using the Alexa web app through a phone. I'll put a link in the show notes to that also for those interested. But basically you just say, where's my stuff?
A shipment for Elias's order, placed Sunday, May 8th, should arrive tomorrow.
So simple as that. Tells you who ordered it, tells you when it was placed, when the order was placed, and tells you when it's going to arrive. You know, very simple, very basic feature, but still pretty handy, still nice that it was added to Alexa. All right, next up in news, Amazon announced a new kind of self-serve video platform this week, which is I think a pretty big deal, so definitely worth mentioning. So the platform is simply called Amazon Video Direct, and it basically allows content creators to, you know, go into Amazon's video platform and manually, you know, without any approval or any interference from Amazon, to basically upload their videos. And so my article calls this kind of taking on YouTube in a sense, and not so much YouTube's, you know, general, you know, main business here, but more of YouTube Red, YouTube's premium business. And so this platform allows content creators to basically monetize their videos in many different ways. So they can offer their videos available for rental, they can have it just for purchase. And those are the kind of the two main basic ones you'd expect. But they also offer the kind of add-on subscription option for content creators. So anybody who just has like a web series or a show or something, even like this podcast, for example, I can go and put up this podcast every week and, you know, charge people to subscribe to my podcast if I want. Obviously, I won't be doing that. I'll look into actually adding my podcast on there to see if it's an option to add it for free or not. I know there's an ad-supported option, so if somebody has ad content that they don't want to charge for, but they can have pre-roll ads, and then I guess there's like a revenue share with Amazon. But this should pretty much open the door for a lot of new content being available through the Fire TV and through all of Amazon's video platform. So I think it's a pretty big deal. It's probably still early on. They've got some launch partners, so they have How Stuff Works, they say Mattel, Condé Nast Entertainment, which, you know, owns a whole bunch of different properties there. The Guardian, so there'll be videos from there. whole bunch of different ones. Some of the add-on services, add-on subscriptions that I've already talked about, like last episode, like they basically are in the add-on system because of this self-serve, you know, video direct service. So pretty big deal. We'll see if it catches on. Amazon is trying to push it by offering what they're calling Amazon Video Direct Star. And so they're actually going to put up $1 million every single month, and they're going to distribute that $1 million to the top 100 publishers in the Amazon Video Direct system. So basically anybody who submits videos to Amazon Video Direct will be in the running for that million, a piece of that $1 million, basically. You know, we could see a lot more interesting content come over to Amazon through this. You know, I'm personally a big fan of YouTube content, you know, YouTube creators. I subscribe to a lot of them. I like to support them directly, but hey, this is just another option now to support them. Hopefully we'll see a lot of the top YouTube creators, YouTube publishers move over to Amazon and give that an option too. All right, next up, let's talk a little bit about some Fire TV apps, some new apps that came out this week. So first one I want to talk about is Mezmo app that just popped in this morning, actually. So this is a DLNA UPnP server and client service, very similar to Plex for those who are familiar with that. But basically it lets you view your local content through your Fire TV. And you know, with Kodi and Plex, those are kind of the two big ways to view that. But Mezmo is kind of now the third bigger way. You know, this software has been around for quite a while, but now it's made its way over to the Fire TV. And the nice thing about it is that it works with a whole bunch of different servers. So Mezmo themselves make a server, and you can install that software on a Windows PC, and then it'll basically find your videos and your photos and your music and make that available. You know, it'll serve those up to any client that can see that. But their software is, I think, $20 or right around $20. So it's not free, unfortunately. And so you don't actually have to use their server software. And so you can use Plex, for example. Plex is free. Plex offers a free server software. So you can install Plex, or if you already have Plex installed, you can just have that running. No changes there. Keep Plex the way it is, running on a Windows PC or a Mac or wherever you have it. And then you can try the Mezmo app on the Fire TV as the client, as the receiver. And so similar to Kodi, similar to Plex, when it finds the content on the server, the Mezmo app will display, you know, nice cover art, background images, descriptions of the show, you know, all the information that you would basically need to present it nicely. The Mezmo app is not free, but unlike Plex, which now kind of offers a subscription model for their, you know, higher premium features, the Mezmo app is just a one-time, I think, $4.80 right now. But they do offer a trial free app. So there's a Mezmo trial app that is available for 15 days to try for free, and it's full featured. And so you can get a good idea of what it's like. So if you're a big Plex user, or you have some kind of UPnP or DLNA media server running, give Mezmo a try. Might be a good alternative. I personally use Kodi, so I don't have the whole server client system. The difference with Kodi, for example, is that it basically just looks for shared folders on your network. So all you have to do is have a PC running or a network attached storage device running that is sharing the files over your network, and it's not actually serving or transcoding or doing any of that stuff. But the advantage of something like Mezmo and something like Plex is that it works on a lot more devices, so you can actually access your content from outside of your house or outside of your local network. So again, just another way to get to your local content. So definitely wanted to mention it. Link in the show notes, of course, to the Mezmo paid app and the Mezmo free trial app for you to check out. All right, next up, in new apps that came out this week that are worth mentioning, there's an app called the Great Courses app. And this is basically a service that provides college level lectures, courses, full on courses for people to watch, you know, video format courses. They claim that they have over 7,000 courses from top lecturers, top schools, and they say that they're adding more every single month. Unfortunately, it is a subscription service that you have to pay for, and it's a bit hefty of a price. They charge $20 a month for unlimited access to their videos. If you pay for the full year in advance, then it's only $15 a month, which is still pretty pricey. But thankfully, they do offer a 30-day free trial. So you can give it a shot for 30 days, see if it's something you're looking at. I mean, a lot of people, it seems, use this service not for entertainment, but for actual real, you know, learning. You know, they offer a lot of good content in there. I was browsing through it. There's a lot of really well-known professors in there. Definitely something worth checking out. Definitely wanted to mention it. All right, next up, I want to talk about a couple new ways where you can access Amazon's Alexa assistant through a mobile device. First up, there's this new app. It's a $5 app, so it's a bit on the pricey side. But basically, it gives you Amazon Alexa on an iPhone. Right now, it's only compatible with iOS devices. You know, basically, it's very similar to the web app, the one that I just used earlier to show you the Alexa packaging information. But basically, it just gives you a button. You press the button, record what you want, and then it replies back with you know, Alexa. Not all of the Alexa capabilities are there. So there are certain things like playing music, for example, things that are more, you know, copy protected services. Those are only available through Amazon's hardware. And so this kind of third party Amazon Alexa capability that developers can add to their apps, can add to their software, those do not have access to all of Alexa's capabilities, but it does have access to most of them. You can control your smart home devices. You can add items to your shopping list, your to-do list. You can, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things. It's a vast majority of things can be done. But in addition to this $5 app, probably more notably, there is this new app called Roger. This app has been around for a little while, and it's kind of a voice messaging app. So the idea behind this app is that you have the app installed, your friends have the app installed, and you can just send short little voice recordings to, you know, back and forth to each other, similar to voicemail, but, you know, kind of more of a immediate thing, and you get your little alert. And the one thing they just added basically was the ability to add Alexa as a contact. So just like you would send a voice recording to a friend, you can send a voice recording to Alexa, and Alexa will interpret that as if it was a Alexa command, and then it will respond. And the app will basically, you know, chime as if Alexa was sending you a voice message. So it's not as real time as you might expect from like Amazon Echo or the Fire TV. You know, there's like a several second delay between when you actually send your Alexa command and when the app actually responds with Alexa's response. And so because of that, it's not really meant, I think, to be used for all of Alexa's capabilities. For example, I actually tried to use it to hear my news briefing, and I have a pretty long news briefing. And the app, for whatever reason, interpreted every time Alexa paused and moved on to the next topic in the news brief. The app interpreted that as a new message. So I got about 60 messages over the course of like a 5-minute period while Alexa was basically talking back to this app and sending me these messages. And so needless to say, it was a big mess. So you shouldn't be using it for that. But it is handy for example, like the checking your packages. You could just open up the app, record, you know, where's my package, you know, where's my stuff, or you know, track my packages, whatever you want to say, and then just forget about it. And then, you know, in a few seconds, you'll get a little ding, and there'll be a little message waiting for you. And at any point, it'll just be sitting there. You could just go back and listen to it to hear the status of, you know, your package or whatever you asked. And you can use it to control your smart home devices and that sort of stuff. So it's interesting. You know, it's not a revolutionary app. It's not something that everybody's going to hop on and start using Alexa this way, because it is kind of odd, kind of quirky, but definitely worth mentioning. You know, any new access to Alexa, any new developments in Alexa, I think are always interesting and always worth mentioning. All right, let's move on to some deal news. So first up, I want to talk about this game Shadow Gun. It just went on sale. Regular price is normally $4.99, just went on sale for 99 cents. That's the lowest price, the new lowest price that I've ever seen this app for. In the past, I've seen it drop down to $1.99, but this is the first time I've seen it drop down to 99 cents. And it's a very popular first person shooter. It has over 60 reviews with a 4-star rating. So, you know, there aren't too many good kind of high quality first person shooter games on the Fire TV. And so if you're into that genre of games, I would definitely recommend checking this game out, maybe hopping on, getting it while this sale lasts. In the past, when this app has gone on sale, the sale usually lasted about a couple days. So I wouldn't expect this to last more than maybe this weekend. And so hopefully you'll get a chance to hop on and get this game if you want. It's only compatible with the first gen and second gen Fire TV, so not the Fire TV Stick, just because it does have higher graphics than your average Fire TV game, and so it needs that extra horsepower. You will also need a game controller to play, because obviously it's a first-person shooter, so I don't know how you would play that with just the remote. So definitely check that out. Link in the show notes to that, of course. Next up in deals, definitely wanted to mention, for those of you in the UK, I know there are a lot of people in the UK listening to the podcast, Amazon is putting their Prime membership on sale from today basically through May 16th. So they're dropping it down to 59 pounds, down 20 from the regular price of 79. And so definitely if you're not a Prime member and you've been thinking about it, it's very rare for Prime membership to be discounted at all. You know, it happens maybe once or twice a year. And even then, it's usually not for all regions. So if you're in the UK and you're not a Prime member and you've been thinking about it, you'll definitely want to hop onto this pretty quick. I'll put a link in the show notes, of course. It is for new members only, so you're not going to be able to renew your membership if you are already a Prime member, you know, with the discounted price. So lastly, real quick in deal news, for whatever reason, this has been a pretty big week for Amazon Video deals. So I actually had three separate posts this week. Usually I don't have anything about video deals, but Amazon has put a whole bunch of their movies on sale for $6.99 or less. I won't go through everything, but if you're watching the video version, you can kind of see here. There's Blade Runner, Castaway, Choke, The Big Year, Chasing Mavericks, Robots, a whole bunch of stuff. Link in the show notes to the full list. So if you're looking to buy some movies and pad your catalog of purchases, definitely go check out this list. A lot of these movies are new, kind of all-time low prices for these movies. I checked a few of the price tracking sites, and most of these movies have never been this low, so definitely worth checking out this list. Also in the video deal category, Amazon put a bunch of seasons for animated TV shows on sale for $7.99. So you've got The Jetsons, Johnny Bravo, Simpsons, Super Friends, Tom and Jerry, Batman, Daria, whole bunch of different ones. Again, check out the full list in the show notes. And this is for the entire season. So you get the first season for $7.99. And it usually is, I think, just the first season that is on sale, unfortunately. But definitely enough to get you going. And also a whole bunch of DreamWorks movies, animated movies, have gone down to $7.99. Again, a lot of these are all-time low prices. So look for that list also in the show notes. And lastly, in video deal news, just today, Amazon put a whole bunch of their movies on sale for 99-cent rentals. These are the HD rentals. There are dozens and dozens of movies. I just picked out 21 here and put them in my post. So you've got Carrie, Godzilla, Tammy, Predestination, Jersey Boys, Prometheus, Natural Born Pranksters, Spring Breakers. Again, the list goes on and on. So, you know, look in the show notes for all these video deals if you like to buy or purchase movies from Amazon. And next up, since I talked about that portable battery attachment for the Amazon Echo last week, I couldn't go this week without mentioning that a new one has actually come out. And I think this one's probably a better option than the previous one. This one is actually made by Mission Cables, and it's basically, it's called Battery Base because it's a battery that attaches to the base of the Amazon Echo and basically turns it into a portable speaker. And so similar to the Amazon Tap, which is basically has Alexa and is a portable speaker, but the Amazon Echo would maintain its always listening capabilities, which I think is the killer feature for the Amazon Echo. Now, the reason I say this is probably a better option than the previous one is that this one is made, like I said, by Mission Cables. They're the same ones who made the Piggyback remote that I reviewed a few weeks back. And I really like that device. And I think they seem like a pretty good company. So I assume this battery base is probably a pretty good device also. But most importantly, unlike the previous one that I mentioned, the one that I mentioned last time lasts up to 6 hours and goes for $69.99. But this one from Mission Cables is $20 cheaper, so only $49.99, which is a more reasonable price. I mean, I know it is a little pricey, but it probably has a pretty hefty battery, and that's basically the majority of the cost here. You know, to get 6 hours of playback time out of the Amazon Echo, which is not meant to be a portable device, you're gonna have to put in a lot of those lithium cells in there. And so yeah, $49.99, link in the show notes, available I think right now from Amazon. So check that out if you're interested in getting your Amazon Echo to be more of a portable device. All right, next up, let's give away some SideClick remotes. For those who don't know, SideClick is a attachment to the Fire TV's remote that adds 8 programmable buttons that basically turn your Fire TV remote into a universal remote that can control your TV, your AV receiver, anything that has an IR remote in your house, essentially. I reviewed it 2 episodes back, and definitely check the show notes for a review there. But the SideClick people, the husband and wife team that run the SideClick you know, Kickstarter and basically came up with Sideclick, sent me 3 Sideclicks, basically as a thank you for reviewing the product and referring a whole bunch of traffic over to them. And, you know, a bunch of you, I think, purchased Sideclicks as a result of AFTV News and my posts all about them the last year or so. And so they sent me 3 and I already have mine. So I'm going to go ahead and give these away. So the first one I'm giving away, I made a post, I think 2 days ago or so, asking people basically just submit a comment to this giveaway post. And we've got over 200 comments here. Let me refresh the page. We'll see how many are in. Basically, I won't be refreshing anymore. So 235 comments, 235 people eligible to win. All right, so I'll go ahead over here to random.org and use that to basically pick a random number from 1 to 235. So put in 235 here, hit generate a few times. You'll see how it basically works. And so, you know, I guess the next number that I choose will be the winner of the Sideclick. All right, number 24, one of the smaller ones. So one of the people who got in early. Let me go ahead and go through and count the 24th comment. All right, counted down. Looks like Rick is the 24th comment on the giveaway post. And I did double check that Rick did not cheat by submitting 2 comments or more than 1 comment. And yeah, he's good to go and he has his email submitted. So hopefully he'll respond to that and I'll be able to, you know, send him his new Sideclick remote. All right, I'll probably cut it out of the episode, but I just did the live giveaway. Big congrats to Lewis who won the live giveaway. So I had my second Sideclick remote that I gave away to somebody who was watching live. And so he won it. He was, you know, we had 29 submissions to the live entry. So much, much smaller pool to win from. So congrats to Lewis. Sorry, couldn't give it to everybody else who was watching live. But I am doing a third and final Sideclick giveaway. And this one is, again, exclusive to those who are watching or listening to the podcast episode. This one is not just exclusive to the live audience, though. This is to all of those who listen to this episode, basically from now to a week. And so if you're watching this episode or listening to this episode before May 20th, basically before episode 40 goes up, you can go to aftvnews.com/win. Again, aftvnews.com/win. I've got it here on the screen. Just submit a comment here. Again, follow the rules, 1 comment per person. Be sure to submit your email address so that I can contact you and get your shipping address. And I will pick 1 person from this list next podcast episode randomly to give away the third and final Sideclick remote. Again, I'm not going to publish that URL on the site itself. I'm not going to put it in the show notes. So you have to actually have listened or watched this episode in the first week that it's released to basically qualify to win. And so I expect there to be, again, a smaller pool of people that will be entered to win this one as opposed to the last one. So definitely get your entries in. Again, aftvnews.com/win. All right, congrats to those who won the Sideclick remotes. Again, there'll be a third one given away next episode, so be sure to get your submissions in at aftvnews.com/win. But now let's move on to the question and answer portion of the episode. As always, on Thursdays, I put up a post asking people to submit their questions for me to talk about and for me to answer here on the episode. Got about 22 or so questions here, and so we'll go ahead and hop right in and answer those. Of course, those watching live can always tweet me at aftvnews.com if you've got questions. I'll definitely be happy to answer live questions that come in as well. All right, first question here from Master Blaster. He says, have you tried the PlayStation View app? I have been really enjoying NHL, the DVR functionality, and added channels that Sling doesn't offer. Downside is there isn't Dolby surround, just stereo. What subscription services do you use, and what do you think of the other TV services planned from Google, Amazon, and Apple? I have not tried the PlayStation View app. You know, I'm not that interested in getting such a big variety of channels personally. As far as what subscription services I use, that they vary pretty much month to month. I think one of the beauties about the online streaming subscription services is the fact that they are no contract and you can easily cancel one and start a new one. You know, I'm not just talking about Amazon's add-on subscriptions. I'm talking about, you know, Netflix, HBO, Hulu, CBS, all of those. And at any given time, I'm subscribed to a collection of those, but, you know, never all of them at once. I think that's actually a big thing that people overlook with these subscription services, these streaming services, is that, you know, there's no need to keep it subscribed and keep paying every single month, you know, constantly forever, you know. Amazon Prime is definitely the main, you know, a consistent one that I always have there because I use it for so many other things than just the video services. But at any given time, I might, you know, hop on to HBO for a month and just kind of binge watch whatever I've missed in the last, you know, whatever it's been since I last subscribed, and then I'll just cancel and then move on to a different service. So I definitely, you know, like Netflix, I like HBO, I like Showtime, I like CBS. I think they've got a lot of good content there. I don't usually hop onto Hulu too much, but you know, definitely take advantage of the fact that you can cancel these subscriptions and you don't have to just stay on them, you know, for an extended period of time. If you're, as long as you're fine with not watching everything, you know, as it airs the same exact week that it airs, and you're fine with just like binge watching what you've missed, you know, in the last year or so. You know, I definitely recommend hopping on and off subscriptions all the time. As far as what I think about Google, Amazon, Apple's TV services, you know, I think you're referring to what is potentially going to come out with like the new Apple subscription service and maybe a new service from Google that they're working on. It's interesting because they're all trying to be a complete replacement for a traditional cable subscription. And when you want to do that, when you want to just cover everybody and cover everything and be the one go-to solution, it's tough. It's really tough to do, it seems like. Apple has been working on their subscription TV service for quite a while, and it seems like they just can't get it right. They can't land those deals. And so I really don't think there's going to be one killer subscription service that everybody's going to just hop on to. You know, maybe it'll pull a lot more people off of like traditional cable subscriptions, but it's not going to be like the killer that makes people, you know, stop subscribing to Amazon Video, stop subscribing to Netflix or Hulu. You know, I really don't have any faith that these companies can pull off some magical service that's going to be incredibly affordable but cover everything at once. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they offer, you know, because again, I'm going to be hopping on and hopping off of these services probably myself when they come out. But you know, I'm not really like, you know, waiting for some miracle service that is going to be the end all service. Next question here from Ray. He says, I know your site is an Amazon Fire TV site. My question is, do you own any Roku devices and have you ever? No, actually, I have not owned any Roku devices. You know, Rokus were kind of more popular before the Fire TV came out. And at that time, I primarily did most of my watching through a home theater PC that I had built, basically just a Windows based little mini PC that I had tucked away in my entertainment cabinet, and I watched everything using that primarily. And I was interested in the Roku devices when they started popping out as a replacement, but it just couldn't do everything that I wanted to do with my home theater PC. But when the Fire TV finally came out, it kind of was the first thing that was affordable, flexible enough to be a replacement for my kind of dated home theater PC. And so that's when I hopped onto the Fire TV. It was mostly the Android aspect of the Fire TV that attracted me to it, because I knew with Android, there was going to be a lot of customizations available. There was going to be a lot of things you could do outside of what the device was just, you know, made to do by default. But with Roku, because they use their own OS and there's not really much you could do with it there, that's kind of why it never really attracted me. Next question from Action A. He says, are we any closer to getting custom recovery and builds for the first gen Fire TV and Fire TV sticks? I'm sorry to say I don't have any updates for that. I haven't been in contact with RBox. I think I'm going to send them a little email this week just to see what's going on there. Again, like I've mentioned many times in the podcast, I know this question comes up several times. I try not to bother RBox because he is doing all this in his free time, and so I don't pester him and try to ask for updates. But you know, he did say that early May he was hoping to have some time to work on this stuff. So I will drop him an email this week just to see if, you know, if he's made any progress and see if he's willing to let me know what's going on there. All right, next question here from Ewell Ebenlore. He says, what's the best way to back up and restore a fully rooted and tweaked 5.0.5/3.0.0.5 image Fire TV 2 to another Fire TV 2? TWRP gets messy and has issues restoring. I've never actually tried it myself to do an image on one Fire TV and install that image on another Fire TV. I have read a lot of people who have tried to do it, and like you're saying here, it doesn't really quite work. I know there are things custom to each individual Fire TV that can't be moved over, and I don't think anybody's really bothered to figure out which aspects you can copy and which aspects you can't. So there's really no easy way to basically copy a complete image on one Fire TV over to another. Your best bet is to copy the user data, because that can definitely be transferred over. So if you go into TWRP settings, when you do a backup you can choose which partitions to back up. And if you just back up the data partitions, that'll actually help you. It won't be a complete image, but it'll at least move over, you know, your app settings and that sort of stuff. So if you're looking to just copy over the apps and that information over to the second Fire TV, that's probably the way to go. All right, next question here from Luthersman. They say, has the AFTV interface stalled? I got tired of the launcher, especially when the banner ad showed up and started advertising shows I didn't like or even want to watch. I love what this little box can do and have been a big fan from the day it came out, but I'm tired of Amazon's heavy hand. My first gen AFTV still runs Firestarter, which is great, but Amazon is trying to stop even this side-loaded approach. So yeah, for the most part, the Fire TV's interface has pretty much been the same as it was from day one, which is now, you know, about a year and a half old. I've heard from my sources at Amazon that there is a new interface in the works, but that new interface is kind of always in the works and it's not really ever a priority for them. It's always kind of something that gets worked on when there aren't too many things being worked on at the moment. And so really, it's like a perpetual new interface that's being worked on. At some point, it'll probably be finalized and released. I don't know any specifics about what is in this new interface and whether you'll be able to make folders, for example, or customize things. But there is a new interface in the works that I've heard about. Now, I think the reason we haven't seen any new interface released recently is because of all those bugs that we had with FireOS 5. And so that kind of delayed a lot of the new features and the new additions, because bug fixing is always a priority over any of the new stuff that Amazon's working on. And so when the Fire TV 2 was first released back in October, it wasn't until about, I think, February or March or so that we finally saw new features being added to FireOS 5, because that entire time between October and February or so, Amazon was basically working on fixing bugs, when if those bugs didn't exist, they would have been working on adding new features. So it's possible that this new interface is going to be pushed back even further, if not, you know, just shelved indefinitely, because a lot of other stuff has kind of taken priority over that now. You know, I know there's going to be new Alexa capabilities added to the Fire TV, kind of more deeper integration. I know there's supposed to be a more robust shopping aspect to the Fire TV added. And so those probably have priority over a new UI. But, you know, we never know. Hopefully, maybe with a Fire TV third generation, where we're kind of expecting that to be released near the end of the year, maybe October, November period, maybe that'll be like the reveal of the new interface. You know, fingers crossed, hoping, but don't know anything about a solid release date. But I am with you. I do know the Fire TV's interface is a bit stale right now, but I from what I've heard, Amazon is working on new improvements to that. All right, next question here from Jim. He says, now that I am rooted and blocking updates after using Kingroot, if I give the Fire TV 2 rooted to a friend who, of course, has a different network, so will it update if connected to his network, or will the Fire TV 2 stay rooted and will not update? So it all depends on how you blocked software updates. My guide at aftvnews.com/block has 4 methods. The first 2 methods are blocking the updates on the device itself, whereas the second 2 methods are blocking the updates off of the device. So it all depends on how you blocked. I definitely recommend blocking on the device itself at the very least. And so if you use the first 2 methods, or one of the first 2 methods, since your device is rooted, you probably use method 1, that will be blocked on the device. So it doesn't matter where you take the Fire TV. If you take it to your friend's house on a brand new network, it will still have updates blocked. Jim continues to say, since he's already blocked updates on the device itself, he's wondering if there's any point to blocking through OpenDNS as well. It's just a fallback, because Amazon can always have a way to update the device. So when you're blocking updates internally, you're basically blocking a single application, an app that is on the Fire TV that we know that Amazon uses for updating the device. And so it's always possible that Amazon could start using a different app that's on the device to update. You know, there's the settings app, there's the launcher app. Any of those apps are technically capable of updating the device. It's just Amazon's never used those apps to update it. And so that's why it's kind of just safe to block also outside of it with something like OpenDNS. All right, next question here from Irish Biker. He says, I have a rooted Fire TV 2 and I'm trying to install a working VPN. Has anyone got one to work? So someone actually just emailed me about a VPN app that works on the Fire TV and actually works on a non-rooted Fire TV, surprisingly. I haven't tested it myself. I just brought it up here. It's just called OpenVPN for Android. If you search OpenVPN on the Google Play Store, you're going to get a whole bunch of different apps. I'll put a link in the show notes to this exact OpenVPN app that the commenter claimed works, and it works on a non-rooted device. Again, I haven't tried it myself, But if you're looking to get a VPN onto the Fire TV, definitely give this one a try. All right, next question here from Nigel. They say, trying to install Grand Theft Auto on my Fire TV 2, but it complains that there is not enough space. I have a large SD card mounted on the box, which has over 20 gigabytes of free space, but I cannot get the game to use it. Any ideas? So certain games that are compatible with the Fire TV are not able to be moved to external storage. And unfortunately, Grand Theft Auto is one of those games. Basically, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Grand Theft Auto 3 are not able to be moved to SD cards or external USB storage, and that's why you're not able to move it. Thankfully, Rockstar, who's the developer of Grand Theft Auto games, have started to make their apps capable of being moved over. The newer Grand Theft Auto games, like Liberty City Stories, for example, can be moved over to external storage. It all depends on how the actual game was developed. The older Grand Theft Auto games, what they do is it's a small app that then downloads a large data file after you install it. And after you launch it for the first time, any game that does that, those are usually the ones that cannot be moved to external storage. And so hopefully Rockstar will update their app in the future to actually download the majority of the data file directly from Amazon. And if they do that, then you'll be able to move it to external storage. But for now, there's really nothing you could do. Next question here from Joe Blanco. He says, what's the future for Kodi on the Fire TV? And is Mr. MC going to have any useful add-ons installed for TV shows and movies that are not piracy intended? So the future of Kodi on the Fire TV is slightly unknown, mostly because Kodi themselves are struggling to find an Android developer. I mentioned, I think two episodes ago, that Kodi posted on their blog that they're looking for an Android developer. They currently have literally no Android developers on the Kodi team. And so basically it just means that if they don't get any Android developers, then they are going to basically put a halt to Android updates. And so Kodi on the Fire TV, while it'll still keep working, the current version will still work just fine. If the Fire TV in the future, for example, gets updated and that breaks compatibility with Kodi, then Kodi, if it's not updated itself, will not work on future versions of Fire OS. And so that's basically the biggest threat in the future, but of course I'll definitely keep an eye on that. And so for the most part right now, Kodi is still getting updated, but it, you know, future versions of Kodi, like maybe Kodi 17, might be the last update for the Fire TV if they don't get that Android developer. As far as Mr. MC and their add-on support, the two developers that are working on Mr. MC, which is a forked version of Kodi that works on the Fire TV and is available in the App Store, they say they are adding, they have plans to add a add-on system where they are going to be more strict on which add-ons get approved for use with Mr. MC. So they've completely stripped out the default add-on support that is in Kodi, and that's how they got the app actually approved to the official Fire TV App Store. But I don't know when they're going to be releasing that add-on support later, but we'll have to just wait and see. All right, next question here from GDroid666. He says, how do I make the screensaver on the Fire TV stick work? I have set it to Amazon image collection and 5 minutes. Everything seems to be set right, but the screensaver never seems to come on. So my best guess is that you probably have some app installed that is either running in the background or even launching at startup that is keeping the Fire TV from going idle and is then preventing the screensaver from kicking in. And so to figure out which app is doing it, my first advice is to go in and force quit every single one of your apps and see if that does it. You know, that might not be enough because the app, after being force quitted, it could actually still launch itself. If force quitting all the apps still doesn't cause the screensaver to kick in, then I would suggest trying to uninstall apps that you don't have data that you are worried about losing, just to see if then it'll go into screensaver mode. But it has to basically be an app that is running in the background or keeping the device from going idle. So app developers have the capability of making their app tell the Fire TV to not go idle. Basically, if you're playing a video, for example, in an app, or maybe listening to audio within an app, that app is basically telling the Fire TV, hey, I'm running right now. Don't go idle. Don't go to sleep, basically, and don't kick in the screensaver. And so if an app developer either coded their app poorly, it could be telling the Fire TV, don't go to sleep, when it shouldn't be. All right, that'll conclude the 39th episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching live, as always, I stream live at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Fridays. But of course, I always put up the episode after the fact in audio format and in video format. If you are watching this on YouTube at youtube.com/AFTVnews, please hit that like button down below. I really appreciate when people do that. Of course, I always put the episode out in podcast audio format only through Stitcher, through TuneIn, through iTunes, through Google Play Store, a whole bunch of different formats. Links to all of those in the show notes, of course. Remember, if you're listening to this, please, if you want to win that SideClick remote, go to aftvnews.com/win. Put your submission there. That URL is only being announced right here on this episode. I won't be posting it on the site. So it's basically an exclusive giveaway to those of you who are listening to the podcast or watching the podcast, and really appreciate those who do that. And so that's why I'm doing that exclusive giveaway just for podcast listeners. I'll be announcing who's going to win that randomly. And in next week's episode, episode 40, you don't actually have to listen to that episode or watch that episode to win. You just have to go to aftvnews.com/win, follow the instructions there, and make a comment in that post. Again, thank you so much for watching, and I'll catch you next week.